Dear Colgate, I love that you love that I love being at home. You even let me whiten my teeth from home. Because you know how I feel about getting up from my cloud couch. The Colgate Optic White LED Kit gives professional level results in just 10 minutes a day for 10 days when used as directed. And that's why, Colgate, I want you to meet my parents. Because ever since meeting you, I've been living life to the brightest. Colgate Optic White. Find it at all major retailers.
Hey everyone, Alex here. Just want to remind you that this episode was brought to you by Wizardry Foundry, the maker of the Grimoire Deck Box. Use the code MMCASTFEB3 to receive 25% off your purchase. So use that code to get all that discount goodness. Make sure also that to just pay attention to them for a while because they're going to be coming out these cool 3D deck boxes. And, you know, you want to get those because they're sweet. I'm getting one with an X-Wing on it. All right, so today we'll talk to you during the cast right now.
Welcome, travelers. We're aware that your journey was difficult, but prepare to have your questions answered, for you have been granted an audience with the Masters of Modern.
And welcome back to Masters of Modern. I am your host, Alex Kessler, here with my co-host, Ben Bateman.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Pro Tour Top 8 Review episode.
Yeah. Guess who's here, everybody?
Yeah, if you could,
we can't hear you, so I don't know why you're saying it out loud.
If you hadn't guessed it, our longtime friend is now just famous. So he came back. It's like that song, "The Boys Are Back in Town," but it's just Andrew. He's back.
It's Andrew Brown. I don't know if you guys did not figure that one out. Say hi.
Hello.
How's it going?
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I bet.
Kind of great. Yeah.
The man who said that Modern was not a good competitive format top 8's the Pro Tour playing Modern. How fitting.
Well, I mean, it's great when you can break it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Winning makes everything better.
Fact.
Yeah, fact.
Yeah, yeah.
Value.
Well, you are officially, and I think you've been this for a while now, but just to continue your record of most guests.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm just slaughtering everybody else.
I think at this point, I'm trying to think if there's anyone.
Hey, Jimmy. I think you've been on like 4 or 5
Jimmy,
times.
Yeah. You and Jimmy are kind of like neck and neck. Like,
who's better at Magic?
Probably you. But Jimmy's better at counting down cards.
Yeah. He does a good, solid countdown. So anyway, we get Andrew Brown on the heels of Pro Tour Oath of the Gatewatch, where his super sick blue-red Eldrazi deck was the talk of the top 8. Actually, I said this on the podcast last week. There was like a couple articles written by like SCG and Channel being like the colorless Eldrazi deck that swept the tournament. It was the talk of the tournament. I want to be like, didn't the blue red deck just crush that deck 3 matches in a row to win the tournament? Like, how is the blue red deck not the deck?
Like, well, that was something I noticed, and it was like annoying me the entire time in defense of you guys, is they were definitely Rich Hagen was definitely multiple times like, well, Team Channel Fireball is like the greats of the great, and then, you know, these other guys, and I'm like, well, they got more people into that and they did really well and they came up with a
they Channel Fireball got more people in.
They got three into
the top 8
with that deck. Pascal was playing a
different deck. With the same deck.
Pascal's playing Affinity.
Right. But 3 and 3, same amount of people from each team, just Affinity was a different. Yeah.
And then they had like something like 16 of the top 25 or something like that.
Yeah, well, to be fair, they had more numbers and more better players. We had 4 people on the deck. They had like 20.
This is like I always say, like when people talk about like who's the greatest quarterback of all time, to me appearances are a big deal. Like somebody who's gone to the Super Bowl 6 times is more impressive to me, even if they've only won 4 of them, than somebody who's just like been and won twice. So the fact that like your guy won the whole Pro Tour with the deck, and then there was another person playing the same deck also in the top 8, to me is more impressive than 3 guys in the top 8 with a different deck, because your deck beat
that deck. They all played the same deck, the same guys.
Yeah.
The same 75.
And your guy crushed it 3 matches in a row, which is why I'm
like... Well, that matchup is sweet for us.
Yeah. Do you think they had any idea your deck was coming?
No.
None. Nobody did.
Nobody did.
Yeah. So we'll get into the deck tech a little later. We'll start talking details. But before we do that, we should let you guys know that we are on Twitter, as you know.
We are. The podcast's Twitter is at the MMCast.
Yep.
I am at Kes Wiley.
And I am at Ben Bateman Media.
I don't have a Twitter.
Really? Still at this point?
I thought you got one and then you went away.
Yeah, I just can't be bothered to
do it. That's fair.
Yeah, it's totally fair. You're gonna
come up and talk to me. Don't like tweet at me. It just feels weird.
Yeah. So if people want to find Andrew, just start screaming out your balcony and he'll hear you.
Well, no, next time you're at a tournament, just walk up and be like, yo, what up? And I'll be like, hey man, you're great. And I'm like, and then you'll be like, hey, you're great. And then we'll have a handshake and it'll be cool.
What if I do that? What'll happen?
Well, I mean,
yo, if I just say hi to you, you're going to tell me I'm great?
Yeah, I think you're great, Ben.
Thanks,
you're
Andrew.
Really handsome too.
It's sweet of you to say. Thanks. You. They can't see us, so they don't even know if you're telling me.
Do the listeners know how handsome you are?
I don't. Let's move on. Let's move on.
Well, speaking of those things, if you want to find out, you can watch our Patreon video on patreon.com.
Yeah.
Good segue right there. You can actually see what we look like. I want to thank everyone that's donated so far. We are recording this like the day after we launched it, so we'll do all of the like prizes of reading people's names off and other stuff starting next week.
Yeah.
But just all the messages and the donate, we already hit, I think, 130 at this point
something
by the
like
time
that.
We're recording this. So like, it's super awesome, guys. I really want to thank everyone who listens, and especially the donators. You guys are the best.
Yeah, it's really awesome. I was just going to say, we have all these different levels, and one of the levels is, I think it's $50 a month, but you get a swag box. We send out like a cool Masters of Modern like product. But the deal is, the first one is just a signed playmat. That's the...
Well, I don't know if it's signed, but it's guaranteed you get a Masters of Modern playmat.
That's the first item. So essentially, like, you're just being really nice and supporting
us.
Well,
I have a suggestion.
Yes.
If you guys have any vile aggregates, Eldrazi Sky Spawners or Drowners of Hope,
yeah,
I'd be happy to sign them.
Ooh.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're always looking for sweet swag to throw in the swag box.
Yeah,
oh, yeah,
that's the sweetest of swag.
The point is, somebody took us up on the offer and decided to do the $50 donation to get a playmat, which is really, really generous and a cool way to just get the first piece of official Masters of Modern swag that we can put out there. So,
you
know, check out the Patreon and let us know, and you might just find yourself with a set of
if you guys have
limited
ideas
commons and uncommons that are signed.
Because we definitely have like a weird curve. There's like a $25 mark that's missing or a $20. So if you guys have a cool idea that's something you guys be interested in as a donation level, please tweet it at us. We're definitely open to all ideas.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. So
thank you guys.
Lastly, just remember to check out the Command Zone. It's our sister podcast on rocketjump.com. They do Commander content. Jimmy Wong and Josh Lee Quiet's awesome stuff. So
I was on it last week.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Just
talking
you.
About my Mirren deck.
Just talking more about podcast
stuff. I was on three different podcasts last week, and it was my birthday the week before that, and I showed up twice on the Wizard's homepage.
I'm convinced you just tell people that you're the only host of this podcast.
I'm not.
This is
I am.
This happens.
Hey, yo, Alex, pound it.
Hey, you were all over that page. Yeah.
I was.
Yeah.
How so?
Like on the coverage.
Oh,
yeah,
sure.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Ben,
yeah.
When was the last time you were on the Wizard podcast? Thank you. Yeah.
It was crazy, man. Like, I've been playing Magic with you for years, like legitimately years, and so like to all of a sudden. And I've watched you in a lot of matches, and they've talked about you on coverage before, but I mean, to be watching not just a Pro Tour, but the modern Pro Tour, and to like see you in the, like, when they're talking like leaderboards, they're like JC and Andrew, and they're just crushing it. Like, they're just not losing any games of modern. And then it's like, oh, and they both made the top eight, and everybody on the chat. I mean, there's 40,000 people watching at times. Like, that's insane to me. Like, your audience watching you play Magic was like upwards of 30,000 on like multiple occasions at one moment. I mean, like hundreds of thousands of unique viewers over the weekend. So it's pretty wild stuff.
I'm blushing.
Yeah.
If you guys can't tell, it's red face all over the place. All right. So before we get into like direct tournament, we've done this in the past where we asked Twitter for questions and we're going to ask them. But normally we do it at the end of the cast. And I realized recently that every time we do that, we kind of become really redundant because they ask questions that we answer in the cast, but because I just read them fresh, we don't actually realize until after I've said it that we're going to do that. So I'm going to ask them now so we're not redundant.
Right.
It's going to be great. All right. So first one from at Dodzor, Ryan D. How do you spend your time preparing, i.e. in limited versus constructed, like percentages?
Oh, me?
Yeah. These are all for you.
These are all for me? What?
Yeah.
Yeah.
People talk to us all the time.
People
you're a
know.
Guest.
Okay. So for limited... the week after the Pro Tour, I host a physical draft at my house every night of the week. And then the week after that, the weekend of that is normally like a regular release or something, go to some event, and then, you know, just generally play more limited.
Okay.
And then the week after that, it comes out on Modo. So then you normally just kind of jam like four drafts a night. So that's my limited testing.
Okay.
And then constructed testing is normally just peppered throughout, except for the first week of limited testing. So you like run a draft, you get done at like 9:30, and then you get on Skype with your team. Like, let's say six people are in the call. You figure out who's going to play who. Who are you playing against? And then you just kind of run with it, you know. And we generally play from about like 9:30 till about midnight. Or 1 a.m. sometimes, and then we just go to sleep.
So when you say like three, four drafts a night, like are you playing multiple drafts at once? Like you have multiple running, or
No, like on the Monday and the Tuesday of the week of the Pro Tour, okay. Like, there were just constantly drafts going on. Like, in our Skype call was like five people, and then like whenever someone had like a difficult decision, they would just start sharing their screen.
Yeah.
So like we would just hop between these screens of only difficult decisions, so we wouldn't be like just like have to waste all of our time watching one person go through some really innocuous motions. We just right. went to the hard hitting stuff immediately, and I think that was a really big help for our limited.
So when I want to jump in really quickly, and we'll get back to the questions. Just because it sort of reminded me of it. When you get to that point where you're drafting a set and you're doing it like four times in a night, and you're just jamming games in preparation for a huge event, you get very used to seeing the same commons and uncommons constantly, even the same rares to some degree, because you're just doing so many drafts.
Yeah.
Like when I do a draft, even if I play the format a pretty good amount, say like a few times a week, I still have the thing happen to me where it's a tough decision. Like, and especially if I'm tired, like if I was going from one to the next like that, and my mind's like a little bit fragmented, I might just make a sloppy pick or not think about it as hard as I otherwise could. Do you just find yourself in like a very dialed zone at this point, even if you're on the third draft of the night?
You just have to think of like the rewards. Like, hey, if I do well in this, then I could do well at the Pro Tour, which is just my life's goal and my dream.
Right.
You can't really think about like, oh, I'm just kind of tired. You have to think about, hey, if I keep doing this, I could win.
Yeah.
And plus, it's really nice to have all your friends there, people who are as good as you or even better than you, tell you what to do.
Yeah.
And that's just brilliant.
Fair enough. Back to the questions.
So that kind of segues into our next question. This is from ThopterCopter at Grapple.
Grapple.
What was the motivation that kept you fighting for the top eight? What drives you?
I really never want to miss another Pro Tour until I quit Magic. Just because the Pro Tour is just such, it's an environment that is so, like, it's electric. Like, everybody's super nice, but you look around and you just see everybody playing at the highest level of a thing in the world, right? And I just never want to miss that ever again until I, like, hang up my shoes.
Yeah. Do you think you're going to be one of these players that maybe like you'll take a temporary retirement and you'll come back in? Like a lot of these pros, they retire and then they just inevitably come back.
Well, I mean, with my current job, probably not. Like,
yeah.
I have to know about card games, so I don't foresee myself ever falling off the train anytime soon because I've locked up gold. So
yeah, so you're queued for how many more approaches right now?
Like seven.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
seven more.
Yeah.
Wow. Insane.
All right, next question from Shivan Bot at Electrototal. Does your mindset change from Swiss rounds to one and duns? So single elimination.
Not really. You know, you just kind of try and take it one game at a time. You don't really want to have other pressures coming down on you because then you might make a mistake. You might think of something else. You just want to keep your head in the game. And yeah, that's about it.
Cool. From Greg at 3Bean Suit. Do you change your socks when entering the top eight or at every round you win?
Every morning.
Every morning.
It's a good answer.
It's also good for everyone. MTG underscore prowess. If Eldrazi was not a viable deck, what do you think the meta at the Pro Tour would have been like?
So that's taking out like, what, like 8% of the field?
Yeah, at least in day one.
So you would have seen, like, you think, like, a lot of Affinity, a lot of Infect, a lot of, like...
Yeah, just...
Aggressive decks.
Yeah, just more stuff like that. Maybe some more Blue-White-Red. I think that was a pretty solid choice for the tournament.
What did you guys think about the really fair decks? Like, Reed played a very strong Jund list, but it wasn't too far from just a stock list.
Yeah.
Did really well. I think it went 8-2.
I heard that, actually. The two matches he lost were the Eldrazi decks, and then every other match he didn't play against
our deck.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, that matchup's just a walk.
Yeah, right. It's too fair.
Yeah.
But I guess that does follow the question. If, before the ban list announcement, what deck were you kind of on?
Splinter Twin? Yeah.
Just straight up?
100%.
Blue-Red Twin, yep.
From Andrew Mullen at ETBGG, is there a single defining moment when you knew you wanted to put in the time and effort to make it to the Pro Tour?
This was when I played a team tournament in Grand Prix Providence like 3.5 years ago. I was playing. I was actually teamed with my roommate Eugene and JC Tao.
Oh yeah,
that was our team 3.5 years ago in Providence, and we 10-0'd day one, just because like I don't know, we had a really good pool, we got relatively lucky, but then once we played against pro team in this team draft, it was team draft, so like you team drafted, then you played 2 rounds against them, so it was really brutal.
Oh yeah,
right. So you had to play the hardest Magic format possible, team draft, against only killers, right?
Right.
And that's when we got kind of put in our place. Like, we went 2-4. If we went 3-3, we would have qualified for the Pro Tour, like, everything, whole shebang, right? But we went 2-4, and we got utterly demolished. And that was the defining moment where I was like, okay, I know I'm all right. Like, I can go 10-0 to GP, but then once I hit the real people, I'm like... nothing compared to them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So realizing that I was terrible at that juncture compared to these people was the biggest moment where I realized, like, I can, if I put in the time, there is a possibility that I could be good as them.
Now, I have a memory of playing at a team format with you, I think in San Jose, probably not too long before then, probably within a year.
Yeah. That was about 4 months before that.
So I think I remember, was JC your partner in that one as well?
No.
It wasn't, okay. So I remember you guys playing and you were like winning, like you're doing pretty well, I think. And I can't even remember, it was just day one. Maybe.
Yeah, it was day one.
You were like almost day two, or you did day two.
No, we didn't day two.
You barely missed, right?
Yeah.
Right at the end. What was like the jump like from that tournament, just say, to the next one, the one you're talking about, Providence? Like
Our pool was better.
Oh, just that it. That's simple.
Well, also like RTR was a little weird. This one had Gatecrash in it. And Dragon's Maze. Yeah, this one had Dragon's... This one was full block.
Yeah.
And when it's only, like, one set, like, everything's a little bit more muddled down.
Yeah.
Meaning there are less cards in circulation, and the more cards in circulation, the higher the skill cap, the skill level.
Right.
The skill cap, sorry.
Makes sense.
This is from Richie Talk, at Richie Talk. What gave you guys the bright idea to make this evil, evil deck?
We were talking about Eye of Ugin, and we're like, hey guys, we know this is busted. Let's make some decks. So JC just comes back with this blue-red one. Then he plays against Ben one night on Cocktris and just absolutely slaughters him, right?
And that's Ben?
Ben Whites, yeah. So he just demolishes him. Ben's playing like 3 different decks, right? So then we reconvene, and we're like, all right, let's just make some versions of this deck, right? And we just... made some different versions and eventually played against enough matchups and tuned it down, got the numbers right until we came to our final evil, evil deck, as you say.
So we'll do a little more of a deck tech and how that deck came to be in a little bit here.
Sure. And then this is the last tweet before we get into kind of the whole chronological story of everything. This is from Brandon at SA Brandon H. He says, hooray, Andrew Brown. So he figured out who you are through our very vague tweet. How much does play testing the matchup the night before versus getting some rest matter?
So this is actually really funny. We tried doing that, but then we realized that we were so incredibly tired that all of our testing was just not useful because we're all just horribly messing up. So yeah, not great. I'll say not great.
Okay, so I'm going to use that as just like a string, what's it called?
Springboard. A segue?
Springboard is the word I'm looking for. Into I want to just sort of take it back before the Pro Tour a little bit and get some background on how this all happened, building the deck, the team, and all that. So I know when you won Denver last year?
Yeah.
Yeah, so Denver was like a big moment for you, right? That was the...
that was the defining moment, I think.
Yeah. That was like the one where you're like, okay,
I qualified.
Yeah, this is the first Pro Tour qualification.
Yeah.
Yeah, so and that's a huge jump too, right? It's not just like... you didn't just top 8.
Yeah.
You qualified by winning a Grand Prix. So you take that, and you didn't have this team yet, right? You weren't part of this team?
No.
Were you part of the closest thing to a team would have been your play group with Eugene,
yeah,
Brandon, all those guys, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you guys played a lot of Magic together.
Ton of Magic.
What was the point when, after that, when you were sort of like, okay, maybe I need to ally forces with a greater group mind here, just beyond my close friends?
Pro Tour Origins.
Okay, so tell me that story.
So... we called ourselves SoCal Silver,
okay,
because it was people from Southern California who were just silver, and it was 8 of us, and we rented a house in Vancouver, an Airbnb. We stayed there for a week, played a bunch of Magic in that house, and had a great time, and we came up with a Thopters deck, right?
Right.
And again, it was Ben Whites just being great, coming up with the deck.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Him and I are like great friends now, and I'm really glad that he exists. So, and then after that, it was Pro Tour Battle for Zendikar. Similar team, more NorCal people. So it was less SoCal, more NorCal. And then, you know, we rented a house for a week and then tested, played Magic. Didn't go so well for our team. And then some people fell off. So it was only like three or four of us from Cali who were actually still qualified after Battle for Zendikar coming into this one.
So then this was a much bigger team than eight, this team, right?
Yes. So this one was about 15 people. So it was really just the remnants of the East Coast teams, the West Coast teams, and the some Canadian teams.
Gotcha. Who would you say from the onset of the 15 people, was mm-hmm. there a sense that there was something of a leader, some like maybe a veteran?
Yeah, Alex Magelton was definitely the leader of the group. He's also known as like that affinity guy.
Yeah.
So he was the big driving force.
Gotcha. So and this though was one of these type of situations where you guys didn't want to get together for 10 days.
No,
you wanted to do it mostly online. You wanted mostly
online,
off site.
Yeah.
So prior to the tournament start date, what day did you actually get there?
I got there Thursday afternoon.
Wow. Okay. So yeah. not much lead time.
I got there Thursday afternoon. Walked into the room, and then we just started having our limited seminar immediately.
Your limited seminar.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
That was great. Like So I'd only put in about 25 drafts before the Pro Tour,
yeah.
which is about like kind of normal-ish. You normally want like 40 before you start playing.
Right.
But it was great because like we were talking about color pairs, and some people are more inclined to draft other color pairs, right? So we just had the expert on that color pair who had drafted it most just talk most about it and what was successful, what was unsuccessful. That was extremely helpful.
Was there a general sense that just like, okay, so most limited formats, once you've played 25 drafts or something like that,
yeah.
there's a general sense of, okay, the best few commons are these three or four. And
yeah,
usually
yeah, yeah.
there's like a strongest, if I could just have the cards I wanted, I would always be in this pair. But mm-hmm. because every good player sees the immediate trend, you can almost always figure out what that is. So that becomes the hottest thing to draft. So you have to figure out, okay, well, what's good against it?
Yeah. So like understanding the core idea of a color pair and finding out what it's trying to do within the limited environment and what cards are good in that archetype and which cards are bad in that archetype.
So at that level, do you guys find yourself almost like metaing the limited environment at all?
No.
No, you don't
can't.
Even...
Just because that's just...
Beyond your control.
Yeah, you open what you open. I mean, there are some corner cases of people being completely insane and like...
Yeah.
But I don't take any stock into it. I like to just analyze as I go.
Okay, drafting and like just limited in general at the Pro Tour at that level. You mm-hmm. hear, you know, when you talk to people who pride themselves as being really good limited players, some people mm-hmm. will kind of blow smoke up your butt, we'll say, as far as they will act like they're really good by talking about signaling and cutting and all these things, you know, words, things that are true, things that do work.
Yeah.
How legitimate are each of those ideas when you're talking limited, or how much of it is just like, you open good cards, you take a strategy, you hope you get the cards you want? I mean, how much do you read into that stuff?
How much do I read into signaling?
Just, yeah, the smaller parts of like a draft, like the actual draft itself. So signaling, cutting.
I think at the Pro Tour level, everybody already understands it because you can't get there without being good. Like,
yeah.
Without having those skills, you can't be there or else you're just going to get annihilated. So it's not really a thing we take into account because we already assume that everybody there knows what they're doing.
Right.
So it's not like you go to a draft at your store and you're like, oh, well, I hope I don't like get cut off by this guy who doesn't know what he's doing.
Right.
Because if you do that at the Pro Tour, not only are you going to lose, but the person next to you is going to lose.
Right.
So it's kind of this like agreement between everybody like at the table. Like, I assume everybody's good. I'm going to read the signals, take the correct card, not be crazy. Like, this is normally how it goes. Like, in my second pod draft, like, I was sitting in between Paul Cheon and Matei Zadelkai, right?
Right.
So I'm solidly in green-black. Matei is in red-white. And Paul Cheon is blue-red-base-blue, right?
Right.
So we're all just, like, totally okay. We're all happy. We're all, like,
yeah.
taking the best cards for our colors. So, like, pack three, Cheon opens a... Planar Outburst, can't take it, passes it to me.
Right.
I mean, I could take Brood Monitor or Planar, or just cut this Planar Outburst. I can't. So I pass it to Matei, and then I just know that he has planar outburst now. So like I can play around it, and just everything is happy, married, and it really comes down to a skill game.
So something like that, when you're okay, I mean, it's a big card though, planar outburst. So like that's I mean, that's a very specific example, but let's just say you were talking about a common level removal spell. The 4-mana black devoid spell, the exile our creature spell. Let's just say you remember passing one of those to the
person. Why would I pass that?
Well, let's just say you weren't in the color and it was the third pack or something.
Second pack.
But I mean, okay, maybe that's a bad example because it's a very powerful card. It's maybe the most common. But like,
well, I guess that's a relevant question. So if you see that even in the first pack and you know the person to your left had been signaling that he was in black this whole time, do you move into black at that point? Second pack.
How can he be signaling to you if you're going the other way?
No. So first pack, he signals to you, he's in black. Second pack, you now get a good black card. Do you cut do you move into that with your previous example, knowing that he's going to then cut you in the third pack?
No, of course not.
Okay.
So I guess my question is, like, when you think about a card like a big rare, it's easier to remember because a huge bomb, But like, let's say a common, like, even if it's just the first pack, you take the rare out of the pack and you do pass him that card, a black common like that. That's really powerful.
Well, I would make a metal note immediately.
Okay, so yeah, so because what I find is like when I'm drafting, some of that stuff will just escape. Like you just, it's hard to track every
card. You have to know like everything you pass.
Yeah,
like it just has to be there.
You keep like a kind of a track in your head, like you just sort of repeat them, like a little list.
And you see that when you see like high level pros release draft videos, they'll know and they'll be like, well, I'm going to make this pick because I know that I passed this good card previously in the draft, so I need to be able to
defend it. Once you do enough time drafts, like you can start recognizing six picks, draft, pack six cards. You're like, okay, that's my wheel pack.
Yeah.
And one of my strategies for remembering what is, like, if a card is missing is I try to remember, like, crappy runs of commons.
Yeah.
So if I see, like, Consuming Sinkhole and Untamed Hunger right next to each other, and like there's like a mid-level card there, and if that mid-level card is gone, I'm like, okay, I know that somebody took this compared to another card that was also in that pack.
Got it. Okay, so and then you're going into a modern pro tour, and obviously limited is very important. You've got this team set up. Were you guys all staying at the same place? Or
nope, we were all just kind of splintered off. Like, this is just primarily online testing only.
How's Atlanta, by the way? Just in general, did you get to spend
cold.
Any time?
My lips got chapped.
You didn't get to go like enjoy any, spend any time doing anything cool. Did you guys celebrate at least on the last night?
Yeah, on Saturday we went to a steakhouse. I bought a third of the dinner because three of us top eighted, which is great.
Yeah.
And then on Sunday night, JC bought dinner.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Okay, so you're ready.
Oh, also, listeners, that's called the winner chicken dinner. If you win a tournament, you have to buy your friend's dinner. This is not negotiable.
It's just the way it works.
All right, continue, Ben.
All right, so you've got you're all set up. You've got your limited testing out of the way. Now, prior to the event, had you pretty much jammed most of your modern games already? Like, you were pretty much ready to go.
Oh yeah, definitely.
How soon before the tournament do you get that out of the way? Like, as soon as the Splinter Twin announcement happens, how fast are you guys making Eldrazi? Like, take me from the beginning when that deck actually came together. That's like what I really want to know.
So the pre-release happened, and then that week we just played limited, and then probably the weekend after the pre-release, so this was during our Southern California draft camp, that's when the Eldrazi deck was made, and then there was a week of tuning it, and then there was the 3 days, then there was Vancouver, and then there was the 3 days before the Pro Tour, and then there's Pro Tour.
So you guys are working on that, and let's say the results that you saw... What was it? Charleston? That was the first modern tournament after the banning, right? With the black white Eldrazi deck, wasn't it?
Oh no! I don't take any stock into SCG events.
Okay, you don't. So that's kind of what I wanted to ask.
Yeah, for modern,
like the first like sort of like quote high level modern event.
That is not high level modern.
Because most people go to that event just with the deck they have already. They're not like really testing based off of what could be happening. And the most pros at that point are definitely not, because they're holding all their secrets to the chest for the Pro Tour.
Like,
yeah. Right, 100%. So I guess I just meant, so you just ignore it completely. If you're testing on your own deck, you're working on it, you don't even look at the results to see like, oh, did something do something interesting? Maybe we can try this out.
The only thing we looked for was there blue-red Eldrazi? And then we're like, nope, all right, sweet.
Nice.
Keep playing this.
Okay, so now if the channel guys came up with the colorless version, and we saw Frank Lepore had like sort of like a Sultai version, right? So
it was bug, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. How did you guys come to blue-red? I mean, we met up, and you were like, we had lunch the week before, and you're like, look, this is kind of embarrassing. Like, don't laugh. You're like, we're playing a bunch of limited commons and uncommons, and we're playing Drowner of Hope. Yes. And like, I'm not kidding.
And I wasn't kidding.
And I was like, I mean, that sounds, I was like, really? Like Sky Swanner? I mean, that card's like sweet. It's like Lingering Souls sweet.
It's
like
Lingering Souls / Explore.
Yeah. But you were like stuck to it. And I mean, I trusted you obviously. Like, and you know, we talked about it off mic, but like we never like shared it. And then I saw it on camera. I was like, holy moly, this is the real deal. So did you guys test some version of the colorless version before you came to Blue Red?
Yeah, we had Urborg decks. But this was really just, so JC is really known for not being conventional.
Yeah.
So like, I remember one time at a Cons of KTK sealed PTQ, I think he registered like 30 lands, 5 Tygum scheming, and like 2 Empty the Pits and some other cards, and like lost his win in for top 8.
Whoa.
So he just has like the craziest ideas because he doesn't really play in paper, and all he does is play on Modo, and his only like contact with like other Magic players is like me and Eugene.
Right.
So he'll just like play in his own little world, come up with his own ideas, bounce them off us, and that will just be his, that's his final thing. Like right. that's his opinion now.
He's a pretty quiet guy in general.
Yeah, very quiet.
Interesting. Yeah, he seemed to be smiling and having fun as he was like crushing his way through the top 8 on camera.
Yeah.
He got a lot of smiles. That was exciting.
It was very exciting.
Yeah.
I was there.
Yeah.
Well, so I definitely think the blue-red deck felt the most similar to Affinity in many ways because it's a bunch of just very synergistic commons and uncommons that almost look like a draft deck. More not modern Affinity, but classic, like the original Affinity list from back in the day. Mm-hmm. How did you guys come about even figuring that deck out, and where did that inspiration come from?
So again, it was just JC being out of the box. Like the main thing we were thinking about was we were just constantly building these Urborg / I decks, right?
Right.
And then we were like, Urborg, what does it really offer us? Okay, we get like Dominator Drone, Bearer of Silence. These cards aren't really super exciting. But then once we kind of branched out and didn't marry ourselves to Urborg, like the possibilities were endless. Like we had like a green-red version. We had a blue-green version.
Right.
Like we had a Vile Redeemer Scion Summoner and like Eldrazi Displacer in some of them. Like once we took ourselves away from Urborg, it really opened up the doors to everything else.
Well, plus you kind of, especially once you got to the top 8, you kind of got free Urborg.
Yeah.
Because they all had them. So your deck got that free swing of being a soul land or triple soul land.
Yeah, triple land.
Yeah, yeah.
Were there moments during testing when you guys were like looking down and being like, Vile Aggregates, Sky Spawner, like Drowner of Hope? I just like, couldn't stop laughing and just being like, what is this? Are we really going to play this?
So this happened in Thopters, when we made Thopters.
Yeah.
Ben Weitz got crushed by Thopters and then said this very statement in the chat, I am 100% not playing this deck. And then flash forward now, JC slaughters Ben in multiple matchups with Blue-Eyed Eldrazi, right?
Yeah.
And then Ben says in the chat, I 100% did not play this deck. So now that's kind of our trigger word. Whenever we hear him say that, we know that we've broken it.
The word never is like solid.
I'm 100% not playing this
deck. You guys just celebrate.
Yeah.
Because I mean, when you look at all the cards on paper, like it's definitely a silly concept if you didn't know better. Was it when you finally decided to give up on Urborg, was that like a really difficult decision? Like,
No. Yeah. Like the thing that really sold me on the deck was because we're playing so many 3-mana cards.
Right.
So we can go I into Mimicker, Endless One, right?
Yeah.
And then we go land into 3-drop, right? That's a good start. On turn 2, we have like 5-mana worth of cards out, right?
Yeah.
But then it really explodes when you get your third land. You can play Reality Smasher.
Yeah.
Or if it's another colored source, you can play double 3-drop. So technically on your turn 3, if you've played Mimicker Endless One, that's 2-mana.
Yeah.
You played a 3-mana card on your second turn, that's 5-mana. And then you play 6-mana worth of cards on your third turn. So you have 11-mana worth of creatures on the battlefield on turn 3.
Now that you've top-8ed a Pro Tour and you played this deck, you always hear stories about pros talk about their first Pro Tour win or top 8.
Yeah.
And they'll talk about certain cards with like a real sense of like nostalgia. Like a certain one card often will have like a real place in their heart is like, this is the card that won me this. Or
sure.
Is it Drowner? Is that the card that like when you see it?
It's kind of Vile Aggregate.
Final aggregate?
Yeah.
Is that the card in your opening hand when you were playing the games to kind of put the biggest smile on your face?
No.
I mean, Iavugan, obviously. Yeah. But I mean, not from a power level, just from this deck is so sweet level.
Oh, Drowner easily. Just because you're like, how do they beat this 5/5 Cryptic Command?
Yeah. Drowner vote 5/5 Cryptic Command.
Yeah.
That's a quote right there. We're gonna tweet that one out. How do they beat this 5/5 Cryptic Command?
Well, we had a bunch of on my like Reddit post thing. We made a bunch of comparisons. So Vile Aggregate is Trample Tarmogoyf.
Yeah.
Sky Spawner is Lingering Souls, Rampant Growth.
Yeah.
Ruination Guide is Elish Norn. And then Drowner was 5/5 Cryptic Command.
Yeah, Drowner. That's so sweet.
And then Endless One was Isamaru Ivy Elemental Split Card.
That card is one of the more like sort of innocuously powerful cards in the deck because it's a scalable 2/2 for 1 for 0 mana. Like that's so crazy.
Yeah.
It's like, that's nuts. Like, they do everything in their power to make 2 power creatures for 1 mana not overpowered. They don't want to make them busted. Like, they push them. Sometimes they'll give you, they give you Kithion or something like that. But it's like, they can't give you, like, a 2/1 for 1 that can just be a 7/7 or, like, be a 10/10. And they just did. 100%. Like, that's so crazy.
I mean, there's always, like, something dangerous with a card that's really good in the early game, but then is a great top deck later.
Yeah.
Like Deathrite Shaman, Green Sun Zenith are both examples where it's like, they're the most powerful when you get them early, but this is kind of the opposite.
Yeah.
But then they're good whenever you get them. Yeah. And that's always a card that you can be like, oh, that card's going to be great forever.
Right.
Though, as long as this land isn't banned.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. So you get to the tournament, you're playing games.
Mm-hmm.
You start the day off with draft, right? Day one?
Yeah.
So how'd your first draft go?
2-1.
Okay. So solid. You get into modern games.
Mm-hmm.
How many modern games into the tournament actually playing the deck in real time was it before you were just kind of like looking at your buddies and being like, oh my God, we did it. Like, this is insane.
After day one.
You had to get through the whole day first.
Yeah. We went really trust it. Our four pilots went 19-1 on day one.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Who were the other guys on the team playing at that?
Ben White's, JC, and Adam Boyd.
And where they finished? Ben White's and Adam Boyd?
Adam Boyd went 9-1 in Constructed, but 1-5 in Limited.
Ah.
JC went 9-1 Constructed.
Right.
I went 8-1-1 Constructed, and Ben White's dragged everybody down. He went 4-1 day one and 1-4 day two.
Ah, okay, gotcha. What's the bad matchup for the deck? Doesn't have one.
Well, I mean, like, if you include sideboard games, I think we're like 45% against Affinity.
Got it. Okay.
And against Infect, probably 50-50 sideboard. You're gonna lose game one, but like, you have Chalice.
So you guys finish day one, and you like go home. What was the general like tone inside the room after you had gotten home? Was it kind of like one of those things where you guys like quietly walked out of the tournament and like tried to not celebrate and then like got into the hotel and like just started like cheering? Like, we did it! Like, we broke the format!
We're not celebrating till we top 8.
Right, right, okay.
Yeah, gotcha. It's very serious.
Yeah, right, right. What was the first night like? I mean, it's a long day of Magic, right? So you're drained mentally?
Yeah.
You could just get home, eat dinner, go to sleep?
Well, there are breaks in the Pro Tour.
Right, okay.
So, you know, like, and plus the rounds move a lot faster than a Grand Prix. So it's not like a Grand Prix.
Right.
Like, you start at 9, you end at like 7. It's okay. Reasonable.
It's like a reasonable work day.
And you get a lunch break.
Okay. Yeah. Grand Prix are just like so brutal.
They're horrible.
So long.
Yeah.
all right. So you wake up the second day. What's the feeling going into day two amongst the team? Like, do you guys have a meeting, a conversation in the morning?
Well, JC went 8-0. I went 7-1. Ben went 6-2.
Yeah.
So like, we're all stoked.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Relaxed.
Yeah, we're just like, you know what? We're going to try our best, and if it happens, it happens.
At that point, how much are you guys paying attention to what other teams were doing and how good, or what decks the higher level players are kind of playing?
Well, this is so powerful. We bought a scout. Jeez.
You bought a scout?
Yeah. Our team had a scout. We had shared scouting information with Team Face-to-Face.
Huh.
Oh, man, it was so powerful. Sat down and knew what my opponent was on.
What does that mean? Yeah.
Oh, so they like have this website where it has everybody's name in the Pro Tour. You just search up their name and it says their deck and contents of their deck.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's like, that's not illegal for tournament play?
No.
It's just totally like acceptable.
Yeah, it was so good. I just knew my opponent was on Affinity and just mulliganed my first hand and then drew my second one. I was like, this is going to be good.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Okay, you had mentioned with the deck, we'll get to like the second day and then the top eight, but you had mentioned with the deck when you were talking to me about it that the soul lands are extremely important, and Ayabugan especially.
Yes.
You just mulligan every hand.
Mulligan every single hand that does not have a soul land in it.
Like what percentage? 100?
Yeah, 100.
Like down to how many cards?
Down to 4 cards.
Once you hit 4, if you don't have a soul land, you just play the hand. Unless it's 0 lands.
Yeah. You can just easily win on 4 too.
Did you ever have to do that during the Pro Tour?
Actually, I'll tell you one story about mulliganing. So this is game 3 against Burn. I'm on the draw.
Yep.
My opening hand is 2 Vile Aggregates, a Steam Vents, Obligator, and an Endless One, right? So I'm like, I'm not going to win on 4 against Burn.
Yeah.
And I'm on the draw. I could draw a Soul Land. I have a Scry. You know, it'll be fine. Scry to the bottom. He plays a Goblin Guide, attacks. I reveal a 3rd Vile Aggregate. I'm like, God dang it, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So draw it, play Steam Vents, tap, pass. He untaps, plays another Goblin Guide.
Yeah.
Attacks. First trigger. Reveal Ayabugan. Second trigger, reveal Eldrazi Temple.
Was your opponent like looking at you just like, oh no?
He was like, oh my gosh. And then I got to untap, play an aggregate and an endless one. And then he was just questioning his life decisions. He like lava spiked me that turn. And I'm like, nice.
Yeah. Because it was you that told me like when we talked before the tournament that where you were just like, think about this. You were like, think about a zoo deck. Think about Lightning Bolt. Think about 2/2s, 3/3s. And then think about just playing a 4/4. And you just play a 4/4 and their life's just over.
Yeah.
It can't beat a 4/4. So
well, like any like Thought Not Seer is just so unreasonable.
Yeah.
When you play it on turn 2.
You take their best threat and then they can't get rid of it.
Yeah, like, I had a match against a Tron player where mulligan to 6, and then my hand is just amazing, right?
Right.
I play Ayabugan into Mimic, and he's like, Sphere, go. I'm like, untap, Temple, Thought Not Seer, triggers, take your Pyroclasm, attack you for 8. And then he's like, second Tron piece, go. And I'm like, all right, land Endless 1/5, kill you.
Just completely ridiculous.
Yeah, like... He had natural Tron in his hand. He had natural Tron into Karn, and it was just easily not good enough.
Was because of the density of Eldrazi decks at the top tables and just like how prominent those cards were, and especially because that's what you had been testing with for a while. Did you guys almost just like kind of forget about Twin? Like it didn't even feel like the same format? I mean, it was so prominent before.
Of course, you just forget about it. It's banned.
It's just gone.
See you later.
Because it was, I mean, I just sort of was trying to imagine like playing at a high level like that where you're so used to playing this one style of deck and constantly sort of playing games where you have to fear Twin or like fear those cards and just not ever running into it. I don't know. It is didn't affect you. You never thought about it.
Nope.
All right. So you're in day 2. You're wrapping it up. You're getting into those final matches. And I'm pretty sure I was watching all these matches. We were talking on the phone for a bit of that, right? Those final.
The top 8?
No. Day 2.
Day 2, yeah.
The win and ends.
Yeah.
All those final, like, 3 and 4
Some of the best
rounds.
Games of Magic I've ever watched on stream were during that, Some those win and ends.
That LSV game was nuts. The one with
when he popped out the gut shot.
Yeah.
Insane.
That was really cool. All right, so tell me about those, like, those last 3 rounds where you're close. Because I remember I watched, okay, you had 2 losses. I saw your 3rd loss.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about that match.
The Shuhei match?
Yeah.
Ugh, I kind of got rickrolled there.
Yeah.
Like, that was bad. I went, mimic, go. I was on the draw. I was like, he's like, I mimic. He's like, Urborg, nothing, right? I'm like, geez, what could he have, right? I'm like, oh, he probably could have Matter Reshaper, can't play it. So I'm just like, land Sky Spawner, attack you for 2, right?
Yeah.
And then he, like, untaps, draws, tanks for about 2 minutes. And then he plays Temple. So he has Temple, Urborg out.
Yeah.
And he goes, Exile Spirit Guide, Smasher, attack for 10, right?
I whistled a lot this podcast. There's a lot of insanity going on in Modern right now.
Continue. Did you just like see it come down and your jaw just kind of dropped? Like,
well, I was like, I don't think I'm beating this one. So,
how unfair of a card does it feel like to play against Reality Smasher?
I mean, not good.
Yeah,
like, it's very OP.
Just like how much better, like comparing the two, Thought Not and Smasher,
mm-hmm.
are they close or is one way better than the other?
They're probably about equal.
About equal?
Yeah.
Which do
I mean,
you like
Reality Smasher is a better top deck, but Thought Knot is just more insane in the early game.
Like, so which of those two cards, when they were your opening hand, did put a bigger
Thought Knot's here?
Thought Knot, because you can play it faster.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay, so...
And then in the second game, like, I think... I have a pretty good start. I have Mimic Obligator in my hand.
Yeah.
But then he Thought Knot's my Obligator. That sucked.
Yeah.
And then I didn't draw enough gas after that.
How many Obligators were you guys playing, man?
Four.
You were playing four Obligators?
Yeah.
I feel like you were playing four of like all these cards. Where's there room for all of them?
You just play four of everything and then three dismembers, and that's it.
You were playing four Ruination Guides, too?
No, just one Ruination.
Okay, that's the card. That's where I was confused. Gotcha. All right, so where... You get your third loss, and then you win-draw? Or you
then
win,
I win-draw, yeah.
Win-draw. Okay, and you knew once you won that it was guaranteed?
Yeah. I was playing against Matt Nass, and he had the colorless Eldrazi deck, and I'm favored against him.
Yeah.
And I drew... we both mulliganed in game three, and then I looked at my hand. It was like, I, Cavern, Steam Vents, Skyspawner, Reality Smash, and I'm like, dude, I'm about to top 8 the Pro Tour.
Yeah.
That hand's so nice.
Did you notice yourself visibly smiling when you drew it, or you were able to
contain yourself? No. You'd give up nothing.
You could contain yourself.
Yeah,
I definitely. Gotcha. That interview where BDM has you guys, the three of you, and you guys are all giddy and like, oh my God!
Yeah.
That was after that, right? That was after the
time? That was right after the Matt Nass game.
Right after the Matt Nass game.
Yeah.
Is that like that experience, that feeling where you're just sort of like, you can't really believe what's happening? Is it almost unlike anything you've ever felt in your life?
Easily, yeah. Like, it's just like your all of your hard work, like the countless hours you just put in.
Yeah,
you're like, oh hey, this worked out. That's nice.
Yeah, like, what are you thinking about at that moment? Like when you're doing that, like just before the interview and after the interview. I mean, what's going through your head?
That I qualified for the next 7 Pro Tours.
Yeah,
that went through my head.
Yeah,
that was nice.
I'll bet. So what'd you guys do that night?
We went out to dinner. But luckily, due to the chicken dinner rule, since three of us technically won, we split our $700 meal.
Oh, you said you went to the steakhouse, that's
right. Yeah, we split it three ways instead of one way.
That's awesome. Nice. That's great. It's good. Good to have generous friends on a team.
Well,
that's the rule.
Yeah, that's the rule. Although it was thrown out there that the winner should game for the check. That added a lot of, JC's not that much of a gambling man.
Right. So.
We didn't do it.
Calculated.
Yeah.
Okay, so you go home, and you know at that point they've announced. So you know at that point you know the decks. You know your opponent's decks.
Yep.
And you know the lists, so you guys have the information. You said you tried to go home and test, but you were just worthless.
Yeah, worthless testing, yeah.
So what's the climate like that at that point? There's three of you going into the top eight, so you know there's a good chance there might be one of you playing one another at some point, right?
No, we already knew the bracket.
There was a zero chance? Couldn't happen?
Well, it could, but they have to be in the finals.
In the quarters.
Gotcha, okay. So it wasn't going to be like a first
round. Yeah, like after we top eighted, like we had to, they like took us into the back room, we filled out our little form.
Yeah.
And then they just showed us the bracket and the deck lists.
Gotcha. I guess what I mean is not like a good chance as in like you'll play each other in the first match, but like you have almost half the top eight. So it's like, it's entirely possible you would maybe have to play one of your teammates in the finals of a Pro Tour.
You don't think about that.
You didn't have a little moment like, I got your back, like we went through this together no matter what happens kind of a thing?
Yeah. It's just kind of like you just look at the immediate thing ahead of you. You don't really try to think down the line.
So tell me about your personal journey. Like you go to sleep, you wake up. Where's your headspace? Like what do you...
I didn't sleep very much that night.
Yeah?
Yeah, I like went to sleep at like 12. I got up at 5:30, couldn't go to...
Just couldn't do it?
Yeah.
Do you get coffee? Do you get caffeine? Like what do you...
Yeah, I just kind of puttered around, and then like I was staying with Ben Weitz, and then he got up at like 6:45, and then we just started talking.
Yeah,
and then we had to get to the site extra early too.
Right,
but they had like free breakfast, free everything.
Nice,
super nice.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
what's that space? The big feature match area? Like on camera, it looks really sweet. It looks really cool and well designed, and
it's just some like gated off little area that just looks nice.
So, like, okay, like, in my experience with television and a lot of the shows I do, it often sets that photograph well and look really great on camera are these, like, tiny little rooms.
No, it's big.
Oh, it's big. Okay.
Yeah.
It does kind of resemble what it looks like on camera. Like, they had those, the big, what are those things called?
Hedrons.
The hedrons. Yeah. Where did you try to take one of those home? Did you ask him?
No, I did not. I don't really care about lore of magic, so.
Yeah, but it's such a good, like, souvenir, right? If you had a hedron in your house?
I actually got the... I got the Pro Tour mats signed by everybody in the top eight.
Oh, nice.
So that's my awesome. Souvenir. Yeah.
Have you ever gotten to play a game against LSV?
Yes.
You have before?
Yeah.
Gotcha. And were you at all disappointed that you didn't get to play against them in the finals? No?
I'm disappointed I didn't get to play against JC in the finals.
Yeah, that would have been awesome. Yeah. Would have been awesome. All right, so you show up, you get your first match. Now, this is like the highs and lows, right?
Sure, because, sure.
Obviously, so I was, this is the match where I was like, I got up and I was like, I think I started a little late. I think I was mistaken by where it started. Mm-hmm. And I was searching everywhere. I think I tuned in like as your final game was ending.
Yeah.
And it happened pretty fast, right?
Yes.
This is even with going to five rounds per game, this is the quickest day three of a Pro Tour since they started streaming it. Just because like
the decks are crazy.
Every deck is either Affinity or, you know, what you just mentioned, you have three Reality Smashers on turn three. Just the games are so quick that...
Okay, so you go in and you're playing against an Affinity deck.
Yep.
And you know that this is not the matchup you really wanted. But your deck is sick.
Well, with the best of five, I thought I was probably 55 to 60%.
Yeah.
But, I mean, as everybody watched, my draws didn't get there, and his draws were really nice. And, you know, that's just going to happen sometimes.
Yeah.
I'm still glad that everything happened up till then. I'm not disappointed at all. It's just not the optimal outcome, but I'm still happy.
Okay, take me through a little bit. The first game, every one of us, good deck or bad deck, has drawn poorly and lost a game one. Mm-hmm. Even if it's three games or if it's five games.
Well, no, my hand was reasonable. It was like Mimic into Aggregate into Skyspawner Endless One. But
I had a nut draw.
Yeah, he just...
So it's
when he played five permanents on turn one, I was like, man, this sucks.
Okay, so that's game one. So then now you go into game two and it's best of five.
Mm-hmm.
You do your sideboarding.
What do you bring in that matchup?
Three Hercules, one Gutshot, three Chalice.
And what do you take out?
Three Drowner, three Obligator, two Thought Knot on the play. And then obviously I didn't go on the draw.
Right. going into that match, where does your state of mind go after losing a game at a stage like that?
Where nothing.
Don't even think about it.
Does not change. You just think about what's ahead of you. Because if you think about other stuff, you're just going to lose.
You're
going to
tilt.
Yeah.
So that's like, and that's like a method you've like trained yourself at this point.
Oh yeah.
Did it used to be worse?
Yeah. If you start thinking about negative thoughts or if you think you're going to lose, you're just going to lose. Like,
yeah,
I've said this before. There are a lot of ways to lose a match of Magic. There are not very many ways to win. Like,
if you do start to, let's just say your mind starts to wander, you start to lose focus slightly, mm-hmm. what do you do to pull yourself back in? Is there something, a place you go to? Is there something you think about that helps you?
I guess it's just kind of the way I've trained myself to play.
Yeah.
Like, always focus on the match. Don't think about anything else. Just like, look at your cards, flip your cards. I guess flipping my cards consistently in my hand kind of brings me back.
Gotcha.
If I'm looking at somewhere else, I just try to look at my opponent, try and get anything off him.
So even going into the third game where now you've sideboarded and you know you have to 3-0 right now.
Yeah.
Like you look at your opening hand.
Yeah.
Do you remember what your opener was for game three?
Seven, no land. And then my six was, I think it was Island, Steam Vents, Chalice, Sky Spawner, Aggregate. That was my opener.
And you mulled to five?
No, you keep that on the play versus them because you have Chalice for zero.
You have Chalice.
Yeah. So my Scry was another creature, so I bottomed. And then I ran out Chalice. He played Springleaf Drum, which is unfortunate. And then I ran out the second Chalice, and then I didn't draw a land until he played a Ravager, and then at that point it was too late.
Gotcha. So you shake hands, you leave the match.
Yep.
You have a moment of like... I just top-8ed a Pro Tour. I still just top-8ed a Pro Tour.
Yeah.
Like, this is still happening, and two of my teammates are still in right now.
No, Pascal lost.
He had already lost before you? He lost before you.
Yeah.
Because his match went first?
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, they did the two,
the two pods and two
separately,
thing,
yeah.
Okay, gotcha. I watched a bunch of those games, but I guess...
These are also, like, 6, 7 a.m. our time.
That's probably why I missed
it. Yeah, yeah. Like, if you caught the end of his match, then you literally caught the end of... the first rounds
gotcha.
Of the top 8.
Okay, that explains why I was like watching the finals at one point, and I was like, so I guess I didn't even realize the time difference was as drastic as it was, because I remember watching the finals at one point being like, okay, if JC wins this, he's gonna make the finals. this is really exciting. This is really great. And then like, and then it was like, and Rich kept being like, he might win a pro tour. Like, he might win a pro tour. And like, looking down, and I was like, finals, JC up. I was like, oh, this is, he's just about this to is, actually the, win. Yeah. He's yeah. literally just going to win the pro tour right now. I'm a moron. Like,
but yeah, I woke up into, I think it was you actually spoiling your, where your placement ended up being. Cause I woke up and everyone was like, oh no, Andrew lost. I'm just like, yeah. And I don't have to stream that for.
My Yay. Girlfriend was like on your team so hard all weekend. She spent like most of the weekend at my house. Uh-huh. And she has no idea what's going on with Magic. She's trying. She understands what modern is at this point.
Nice.
Yeah, it's good stuff. I kept like keeping her updated all weekend. She was so excited. She like knows more about you than she knows about most people. So.
Whitney learned this weekend just because I like was attached to that TV streaming it the whole time. Like now knows like how pros. In the pro tour work, how top eights work, how do you qualify? Just because I was just like, this is how this is happening, and now I know what watching football is like.
Yeah,
I now understand it.
Sure.
Once you were knocked out, you and Pascal, were you both just like 100% like Team JC, just like so stoked?
Oh yeah, yeah,
so stoked to support and watch.
Yeah, because in the backstage you get to have some plus ones, so we invited like Ben, I invited VD, so like we were all back there, and we're all rooting for him. And they have these like headsets that you put on that you can watch the stream. You listen to the stream because they don't want to like play any sound in the backstage area so the players can hear.
So are you actually physically watching the match or you can see
No, you're like on a couch with your headset and then you're watching the stream.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. Cool. So we were all like rooting for him. And then when the semifinal that we didn't care about was playing, Pascal and I, we like went to the front desk ladies. We're like, hey, can we have a box? And they're like, okay, here's a box. And then we pack Ward, and I won an expedition off Pascal.
Really?
What a loser.
Sweet.
Which one?
Here's a funny story. So after I won it, it was a Flooded Grove. I was like, look at this Flooded Grove I got. And then VD just snapped off this dagger into my heart. He's like, man, so you're getting pretty flooded today, huh?
That's pretty good.
So looking back on the tournament and how you did... Are there any things you would have done differently or applied differently towards how you played? Or do you think you just generally, I mean, you made the top eight. So like that's kind of the goal in the first place. So what do you think you would have made differently or done differently?
There are a couple picks in limited I wasn't 100% sure about. Otherwise, I don't know. I made one mistake in my match against Matei Zadalkai in Constructed. Yeah, that's it though.
Okay.
What was the sweetest deck you saw all weekend that wasn't your deck? Like, what was the deck that you saw where you're like, oh, that's pretty epic. I love that you're playing that.
So I saw somebody playing Spreading Seas in Blue Eye Red. Oh,
that's sweet. Spreading Seas is awesome.
Yeah.
It's a real good card.
Yeah, it's quite good.
Oh, nice. All right, I remember. So, right next to my first round, I saw someone lose on turn two. So the guy goes like crack fetch serum visions 17 after the like well, so the Naya guy goes Nakadal go
right.
Then the other guy's like crack fetch 17 serum visions. He's on like ad nauseum right.
Yeah.
Right.
And then the other guy draws. He's like, all right, land, burning tree, burning tree, burning tree. Burning Tree, Reckless Bushwhacker, kill you.
Whoa.
That's insane. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Wait. There was one of the 8-2 guys was a zoo with burning, like a red-green, you know the red-green aggro decks.
Yeah, red-green, like, Reckless Bushwhacker, Naya, right?
Yeah. Which is just super quick, super insane.
That's crazy. That's awesome. Turn 2. Yeah. I guess there are lots of turn 2 kills in Modern if you draw that.
Oh, I saw Kalidus and Jund. That was cool.
Yeah. That's what they were playing two of them in.
That card's Reed's sweet. Deck.
That card is sweet, yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting to see. So speaking of your deck and how it worked and functioned and everything, we had our whole discussion last week of like health of the format, and we established between the two of us that we, as viewers, really enjoyed this Pro Tour. It was really fun to see the new cards.
Yeah.
It was cool to see these like lightning fast decks. Mm-hmm. It's not a format that if this continues, like if each of the Grand Prix Modern over the next 6 months to a year are kind of similar, where these decks are just crazy unfair and dominant, that it's going to be very fun to continue to watch or play. So if that's the case, there will have to be a banning. What's your feeling on that? Like, does the deck and these decks in general feel completely unfair, like unfixable? Or
no, there are certainly bad matchups. Like, if someone is intimately familiar with the deck and they're playing Malira Company, they'll beat you.
Really?
Yeah.
They're fast enough to do that?
Yeah, they have infinite life. You can't beat that.
No, but I just mean like your nut draws can kill them like so fast, right?
Yeah, but they can poop out blockers.
Right.
Like the problem is like, sure, you can play a 7/7 endless one, but like they have Birds of Paradise.
Right. You play the birds on turn one and took over the game.
Yeah.
Nice 10/10. I'm just going to bird here.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess Finks, you were talking to the other day.
Yeah, Finks can be hard to slog through just because like you have a card like Ruination Guide, which doesn't really line up well with Kitchen Finks.
Right.
Right.
Makes sense.
No, I mean, a lot of the deck is just every creature I have 2-for-1s when it dies, like, or just as a value thing. And so getting through that with trying to attack is much more difficult than...
Yeah.
I mean, that's the deck I'm literally put it together. If I have to get good and just in case I'm hedging my bets that the Eldrazi deck sticks around, that's my new go-to. Just because if it gets banned, that deck will still be a thing.
Right. Well, okay, so when you say that, if you have intimate knowledge of the deck, like that's like saying, I don't know, any of the decks that were previously sort of the boogeymen of the format. Let's just say Jund with Deathrite, and like when Jund had Deathrite and Bloodbraid,
sure,
and it was like just busted and like really, really, really unfair. But if you knew that was what you were playing every time and you knew that your deck had to be able to crush that deck, there were things you could do to crush it.
Yeah, definitely.
So my point is the power level of this and having 8 Soul Rings is so over the top that unless you are like specifically constructed to beat 8 Soul Rings, you can't just play a deck and have a shot, right?
Well, you can play like Affinity and Infect and have like a nice match of magic.
Sure.
But if you want to like play like fair stuff, no, you're going to just demolished.
Right. So in the sense that they banned Twin for the sake of shaking the format up because it was oppressive, quotes, in the sense that you couldn't play some things, this is equally as oppressive.
And more.
More oppressive. Right. Okay. So then I mean, with that in mind from somebody who just top 8-ed, then I think you have to assume there will be a banning at some point.
I don't know. Well, we'll see where it goes.
Yeah. I wonder how soon. Can we talk about the actual deck and like tech it out really quickly?
Yeah, sure.
Obviously, we've talked about it quite a bit, but just take us through sort of the whole list. I mean, you said it's 4 hubs of everything except for 3 dismembers and 1 ruination guide. Yep. But
or kind of what, like also the game plan. I mean, we've talked about it pretty thoroughly, but I think you can, what are the things you're looking to accomplish? What are the things you're not looking to accomplish?
Okay, so you're looking to mulligan every hand that does not have Soul Ring in it.
Right. And he means Eldrazi, Templar, Iavugan.
Yep. And then besides that, you're just looking for a mix of lands and spells. Make sure one of your lands is one of these.
And powerful, aggressive things that are too difficult for your opponent to recover from
quickly. Yeah, so I'll just bring up my point from earlier. Like, you just have so much more mana worth of creatures due to your lands putting in overtime. And I know it's like kind of hard to grasp that, like, oh, I mean, you just, all you're doing is playing these creatures. But like when you are actually against it, the amount of power that's on the board that comes out so quickly is just so ridiculous that, like, and you have over-the-top things, you can go wide. There's just so many different angles to attack. Like, Aggregate and Smasher have Trample, so tokens aren't good. Drowner exists, so Tarmogoyf is bad.
Right.
And then you have Sky Spawner, which can go around more things. It's just like each card attacks from a different angle and it's just so beautifully constructed. And like Obligator steals their big guy. Like,
yeah. So, okay, let's go with the 4 ofs. You start with 4 Vile Aggregate.
Yep.
You start with, then you go to 4 Endless One.
Yep.
You go to 4 Mimic.
Let's start with the colored spells first. I think these are most important. So the blue spells are 4 Eldrazi Sky Spawner.
Okay.
1 Ruination Guide.
Sure.
And 4 Drowner of Hope.
Okay. And you established 4 Drowner of Hope was correct after just testing. Was like, this
is the
best.
Yeah, we played 2, and then every time we drew them, we're like, geez, this is not fair at all.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. All right. So that's 9 cards. There's your colored spells. Or those are your... that's
blue cards.
What about Obligator?
Obligator's red.
Oh, gotcha. You were just talking about blue cards.
Yeah. Okay. And then another colored card we have in our deck, Dismember.
Right. So 3 Dismember.
Colored,
sometimes you get to play it without losing life if they have Urborg across from you. Which...
Or you have a Gemstone Cavern with a luck cavern.
Oh, yeah. How did you guys come to the Gemstone Cavern with a luck?
Oh, free roll. That's just a free roll right there.
Oh, no. It happened, I think, twice on camera. I was like, that's the first time I've ever seen that played on camera. I think the card's insane.
It was the ultimate Rubbins in JC's final game.
Yeah.
Just the ultimate Rubbins. Like, the mulligans are happening and you're watching and you're like, and he has Gemstone Cavern. Are you kidding? Like, that's another one of those things where, like, so last week we were talking on the deck on the pod about just in general, because you guys have access to 8 cards that produce two mana on turn one. Yeah. And that's really unfair. And in Magic's history, inherently, like, things that produce mana quickly are unfair. Yeah. So much the point, so even that sometimes it's worth creating card disadvantage to do so.
Yeah.
It's just
a Chrome Mox.
So we were talking about, like, okay, what are the other things that do that? And I was saying, like, okay, Spirit Guide obviously does this. Like, Caverns is interesting. Like, it's an interesting way to gain advantage in a format that's really powerful and fast. Why not more than one?
It's legendary.
You just don't want to bother.
We have a second one in the sideboard for when you're on the draw.
Right.
It also makes Wingding, too, which is nice.
Wingding?
A colorless mana.
Got it. Yeah. Wingding is just, like, the theme of the set, so you call that then.
Yeah, the colorless mana just looks like a Wingding. So you're
just... Gotcha. You know, like the font.
It's like a diamondy thing, and you're like, where does this come from? Definitely Wingdings.
Got it. All right, so there's your colored spells for the most part.
And then the red cards are 4 Vile Aggregate, 4 Eldrazi Obligator.
Right. Obligator, sweet.
Obligator is a nice one.
Yeah. Did you guys establish 4 pretty quickly, or?
JC played 3, we played 4. The only difference in our main deck was one of his obligators was a second Ruination Guide.
And did you wish you just had, like, more room for more Ruination Guides, or you were happy with one?
No, I that one was, like, really a coin flip. It didn't really matter very much.
Yeah.
Like, Ruination Guide died more often. Obligator was more bigger swings, but Guide is more consistent. It's very marginal.
Gotcha. Okay, so then now let's get to the actual, like, heart meat of the deck.
Let's get to the one drops.
Yeah.
Eldrazi Mimic and Endless One.
You play 4 each.
4 each.
Yeah. Did you guys know Endless One right away from the very beginning?
No. We were like playing 2 and we're like, yeah, it's just flexible. You know, you don't want it every time. And then we realized, man, we just want this every time.
Yeah.
And then 4 Thought Not Seer, 4 Reality Smasher.
Those are like the marquee cards of the deck.
Yep. And then that's it. Yep.
That's the whole deck. Yeah, it's a streamlined deck. It's very efficient.
Yeah.
It's just 4 flaws
of everything. Whenever you're in that situation, you're generally playing a deck that's in a good place.
So tell me really quickly, because obviously the channel deck is really good. That was a really strong deck.
That's a meta deck.
That was a meta deck, exactly. Yeah. So that was like the smart... Your guys was like the clever, like the most clever deck.
Yeah.
Well, it was the most aggressive version of Eldrazi we saw.
It was the most aggressive. Like, channel made their deck in anticipation that there were going to be no other Eldrazi decks.
Right. So
they were kind of right. There were only 4 other Eldrazi decks.
Yeah.
5.
5 others.
Yeah. Well, I mean, something that's interesting, I mean, we mentioned this on our preview for the thing, that level 0 was the Eldrazi decks, and then level 1 was all of the super aggressive, and you're kind of a amalgamation of those two things, being both, we're taking advantage of getting these insanely powerful new cards with Soul Lands, plus we're just way more aggressive than anyone we're running into.
Yeah, we just said level 0 was decks that play 4 Eye of Ugin.
Yeah.
And then throw in the rest.
Yeah.
All right, super cool. So that's the deck. Tell me about the sideboard quickly.
3 Hercules Recall for the single matchup.
Yeah.
Cage and Relic for graveyard stuff. Gutshot for Affinity and Infect. Chalice for unfair stuff, Affinity, Infect.
How many Chalice?
3 Chalice.
Okay.
So would you... Is Hercules Recall the best...
Yes.
For the colors you're in, the way you're playing?
Well, we weren't playing a mountain, so...
Oh, okay.
The double red is also non-tenable.
Right.
Otherwise, you would have played Shatterstorm or Shattering Spree.
No. Probably Vandalblast.
Vandalblast, okay. Sure.
Cool.
And then the last sideboard slot was Stubborn Denial for combo decks. And Tron.
Right. Okay.
Gotcha. Did you face Tron very often in Constructed?
I actually played 8 different decks.
Really?
Yeah.
If you don't know, that's fine, but what were the 8 decks?
My first round was Tron. Second round was Ad Nauseam. Huh. Third round was Affinity. Fourth round was Burn. Fifth round was Suicide.
The Death Shadow deck?
Yeah. Sixth round was Infect.
Right.
Seventh round was Frank Lepore.
Right.
Eighth round was Shuhei. Ninth round was Matnass. And last round was LSV. So the last 3 rounds I theoretically played colorless Eldrazi.
What did you think of Lepore's Eldrazi deck?
So... I don't actually think it was as good as ours.
Yeah.
He did 6-0 limited, and he's 6-ward constructed.
Gotcha.
I mean, it's still a great accomplishment to do that, but like his deck was not as good as ours.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's
a,
he
so
was
his limited talent helped him a lot. Where some
yeah. 6-0ing limited is like you then you Bunkers. Can just 6-4 constructed and make
right. Complete. Yeah, interesting. Okay, so that's your sideboard. Any like particular matchups where you're like this is 100% Stone Cold what I want to see, and this is the nightmare scenario. Or it's just pretty
fair decks and fast decks.
Yeah, I mean, I just. If I have this deck, I just want to play against other modern decks that are probably not Affinity. That's about it.
What's your opinion on the ability to, like, just say now that you're playing with such a high level of pros and you have a bigger team and now you have the experience on the big stage like this, mm-hmm. and now you have firsthand experience actually doing what they always talk about, breaking a format. Like, you guys did it. You broke the actual format. Going forward in tournaments, like, what's your faith in your ability to do something like this again or with some consistency?
Well, just like getting the process down.
Yeah.
Like, the process is the biggest thing. Like, having faith in yourself and having smarter people with you trying to do the same thing.
Right.
Because one of the things we did was we siloed ourselves. Like, we each come up with our own version of this, right? And then we play with our own version. We see what we like. Other person sees what they like. Third person sees what they like. And then we try to kind of marry all of these ideas together.
Why were the players on your team that didn't play the Eldrazi deck? What was their reason? Why on earth would they not play it?
They didn't have faith in it. You know, they saw Eldrazi Skyspawner and they were like, I don't want to play this.
Right.
I mean, one of them was on Affinity, and a lot of people that played Affinity were people that were just more comfortable with that matchup ahead of time. And
Right. No, I mean, I get it.
Well, there were a section of them who were playing a red-green Scapeshift deck that did very well. It was
Still
like...
with Primeval Titans and
Through the Breach.
Yeah, Through the Breach.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
They call it Spaghetti and Meatballs. Pretty nice.
Value.
Yeah.
So that's kind of, I mean, do you have anything else you want to say as a final sign-off of things about the Pro Tour and the fact that you made a top eight and last words of wisdom?
Yeah, just take Magic one match at a time. Try and be as positive as possible. You know, don't. If you're in your little Magic circle and everybody's being negative, like, you guys aren't going to win. You just need to be positive. You need to believe in each other. And you need to be like, you know what? We might have lost this round, but I know what I did wrong, and I'm going to strive to not do that. Instead of being like, man, I got mana screws. This is the worst.
Right, right. Bad beat stories are the worst.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great. All right. Well, thank you for coming on.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you so much for coming on. Yep. We're really proud of you. We are happy to hear the story.
Thanks, man.
Yeah.
Is there anything you want to shout out to the world? Life-wise or work-wise or internet-wise, or you just, next time someone sees you at a GP, high-five you, shake your hand, and say, nice to meet you.
He'll tell you that they're great and handsome.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's about it.
Okay. All right. Just so, you know, to remind all you guys, make sure to follow us on Twitter. We're at the MMCast.
Yep. I'm at Ben Bateman Media.
I'm at Kes Wiley. Make sure also to check out our Patreon. It's sweet. There's sweet stuff you can get. We really appreciate the people already donating. We'll start, you know, you'll start hearing us either playing, I think the $10 level that they get to record a message. And so you'll start hearing those, or we'll start shouting out people's names.
And we're going to have some signed Vile Aggregates, Sky Spawners, and Drowner of Hopes
in the swag box.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
Probably so, for like this, like the March.
Yeah. The second. Month.
Because the first thing you get, no matter what, you get a mat.
Yeah.
Because that's the easy to accomplish. And then it's kind of like the guaranteed thing you're going to get. And then from that point on, you get sweet stuff. That'll be a monthly different thing.
And the swag box, for the record, because it's obviously a generous donation. We're not just going to be like throwing you guys some Tic Tacs and toothpicks. Like, you'll be getting something that has actual value, either something that we are selling as a product, or even if it's just cards that
I think
are relevant.
I for sure can guarantee that whatever we send you, we've spent $25.
Exactly.
On.
Yeah.
So like, in reality, you're donating $25 and then buying a $25 thing.
A great example is like, if, you know,
like the mat costs us $25 to send to you,
or like, you know, Alex, one of his favorite cards is Geist, and it's a modern card, so perhaps it's a signed Geist
or place at a Geist, which will be around $25, though I think it's getting cheaper because dual decks are coming out and no one's playing Geist.
Yeah, but the point is we're not just So you guys should check it out because the Patreon is awesome and it is helpful to us to continue expanding our content. And
make sure to check out the Command Zone. They do awesome Commander content. They probably did some cool thing this week.
Yeah.
Make sure to check out their Kitchen Table Fables videos. So really, their YouTube channel is probably the best place to catch them. I was actually watching, because I was on this one, I like watched the video instead of listening in my car. And like, they have really cool backgrounds in their YouTube videos. Someone's animated it for them. And like, they have this new they've literally animated the Sol Ring, and then it like spins and then changes into the fire art for Sol Ring. So like, it's really cool.
Wow. I'm
really jealous of their videos. Those That's one reason to donate to the Patreon, because maybe videos will happen.
We'll just pay them to edit.
Yeah. I think they, they're spending a lot of money, but yeah. One day.
It's awesome. It's really
with
cool.
your help.
With your
thanks
help.
To viewers like you.
Yeah. All right, that's so, going to wrap everything up.
We'll see you guys next week. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to the mmcast@rocketjump.com. See you later, alligator.